Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Cast a Dice, a Warhammer podcast. This is going to be episode 11. It's a good episode we got for you guys this week. There's going to be plenty of salt to go around, I'm pretty sure, because we're talking about it's probably some topics that are pretty near and dear to our hearts. Things that we would like to see in this game that we love so much. These things that we would like to see changed for the better. Things that we think might help the game in ways beyond just being a good competitive game, games that will make the game flow better, pretty much anything. We're going to be talking about a whole slew of different suggestions between the three of us. I know all three of us kind of have a different view on what we think would make the game better, so it'll be an interesting discussion to have throughout this podcast. And again, if any of you out there listening in the internet land have thoughts and suggestions as well, please feel free to comment them or email us at ctdwarhammer@gmail.com. That's the Gmail for this podcast. I would love to read your guys' suggestions of what you think about the game as well and what you would like to see changed, and maybe we can incorporate them into a show and we could kind of talk about those as well. So again, ctdwarhammer@gmail.com. Getting a little tongue-tied this morning. That'll be our email going forward. So again, any questions, comments, concerns, just direct it to that email. But yeah, episode 11, here with Caramon and Wayne again. Dennis hasn't been able to join us for a little while because he's in the process of moving, but he will be back for the next podcast, so the whole crew will be back together. Hobby progress, as far as that's concerned. I know Wayne told me off cast that he hasn't been able to get much done because he's been busy with work, and that's understandable. And he's been sick, so his flesh is weak.
Right. Nurgle has blessed me.
Now, Caramon, you said you didn't have much hobby progress, but you had a lot of gaming progress. So, how's that for you? What did you do?
Well, last weekend, me and my pals got together for our first narrative Warhammer 40k campaign on the gloriously named planet of Campanius Prime. The dudes are not creative.
Obviously.
So we went about it a bit weird and asymmetric because we had like five people. So I think everyone got like three games in. We didn't really play everyone, and it went weird. I actually basically crushed it in a landslide because Thousand Suns at small point games with their AP2 bolters are brutal. Absolutely brutal.
So winning planets for chaos, I like it.
Yeah, which narratively, I just got what I wanted off the planet. Like, I was looking for an artifact, and I basically got it and just went, fuck this shit, I'm out again. The Tyranids got a little bit their face bashed in because of a little bit terrible matchups. They got gunned down by Imperial Guard and Tau.
Ouch.
Yeah. Imperial Guard and Tau didn't fare much better either because I crushed both of them, and they had, I think, a very, very close matchup against each other. And our poor Blood Angel just got buttered down. Just we took his head, just smashed him in the ground, and left him there.
Like, literally or figuratively? Hopefully not literally, because that's a crime.
Yeah, I'm aware. No, figuratively. So I think he just basically rage quitted after the third game and just went like, nope, not playing anymore. I get in my kill team and just, I'm playing that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he just got...
What was the point level for the event?
We didn't go point level. We went with, well, we started at 500 and like went up to 1,000.
Okay.
About. So it was smaller. And Blood Angels don't do well at small points game. It's just, they need a bit more.
I'm honestly surprised Thousand Suns did too. I mean, AP minus 2 is great, but against Guard and Tau, that doesn't mean a whole lot. I'm surprised they weren't able to gun you off.
Yeah, me too. But, like, The guard player went a little bit soft on us. He just brought one tank and like 40 dudes and I think a couple sentinels, if I remember right.
So he was playing a narrative campaign with, you know, in good spirit. He didn't bring a Castellan knight and
No knights.
Okay.
What was funny in the game against the Imperial Guard, it started off a bit rough for me, but because we were playing narrative and the CP rolls were really insane, he tried like to roll three times for his seeker missiles. I got all the CP, went up to like 8 total, and he just was raging because he still missed his shots.
Oh, that sucks.
So basically, fate was on my side. Siege intervened for his favorite champion.
Did you summon it all?
No.
Okay.
I totally forgot I could do that, actually. I was just like, all right, I got my 5 Terminators, I got my 10 Rubrics, I got my Exalted Sorcerer. Let's bring a Predator tank for funsies and just keep shooting.
It would have been even worse if you started summoning.
Yeah, I think that would have gone sideways even faster.
Oh, that would have been funny. All right,
but yeah, good times.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a good weekend. That's good. I've played a couple games since the last podcast. I got a little more painting done on my Iron Warriors. Before I get into my game progress, big news. I'm going to be heading to LVO along with Rob and Dan. Rob has been on the cast before. He's our Age of Sigmar guy, and Dan is also another Age of Sigmar guy we have who's going to be making the Age of Sigmar podcasts, the ones focused on Age of Sigmar with Rob. They're actually working on one now, logistically, but Rob is in Mexico. So when they get back, they're going to be making a Age of Sigmar cast, probably revolving around the new General's Handbook, because that's due to be dropping soon. So that's going to be them. And Dan's a very good painter, so he's been painting a lot of armies that are going to be used for the channel battle reports. So you're going to be seeing more of him soon, and they're going to be heading with me to LVO. It's January 24th through the 26th, and it seems like it's going to be a pretty good time. They're both entering the Age of Sigmar GT. I'm entering the friendly tournament for 40K. Not quite ready for the champions one yet, but maybe the year after. After I get some more ITC experience, we'll see what happens. So that's exciting news right there. I'm looking forward to a trip to Vegas. As far as games I've played recently go, I've had a good game against Space Wolves where I just absolutely dismantled him. Havocs, Autocannon Havocs in particular, are pretty good against Primaris, pretty good against Wolfen. I wasn't able to get my Death Hex off on his Wolfen with Storm Shield, so they were a pain most of the game. It took me 3 turns to get rid of him. He made a lot of 3-up saves, but eventually, because he castled up for whatever reason, I was able to kind of surround him on the board, and I had so much board control at that point that he could move his Wolfen up and lose a couple of them every turn, but I was able to just keep shooting at him, and he was just kind of surrounded, so he couldn't really go anywhere. So I kind of just outplayed him on that one. If Death Hex went off, it would have been even worse. My most recent game, which was actually a really exciting game, even though it ended up being a landslide, was versus Orcs. And it was only a landslide because my Kaitan ended up in a fist fight with his Stompa. And they both beat the crap out of each other. And then the Kaitan finished off the Stompa, who proceeded to explode. And then the explosion killed my Kaitan, who also proceeded to explode. But my Kaitan was the only one in that area. But his Stompa, two of his war boss on trike, his war boss on bike, one of his buggies, and a bunch of bikers were all around my Kaitan, aiming to finish him off. So not only did the orc player lose a Stompa, but he also took 2d6 mortal wounds to everybody around that area. So he ended up losing like something like 1500 points in the resulting explosion total, because a stomp is like 900 something just on his own. So that was pretty epic. And then after that, it was just my guys in the back just sat back there and mopped up. I'm finding that Havocs, I'm using my auto cannon Havocs because they always put in work for me, but I find that my las cannon Havocs will get to shoot at maybe one or two things, and then once the tanks are gone, they're kind of useless. And Havocs actually still die pretty fast despite the toughness 5. So I'm not sure if I'm going to keep them in my list. At least I'm not going to keep two units in my list. I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do with it yet. I really like Havocs and I painted them well, so I want to use them. But they haven't really wowed me. Even though it's kind of tough. I can't really say that because every game I've played them in, they end up killing more points than they're worth, especially the last cannon ones. Every turn, like when I played the Stormwolf player, I had shot his Stormwolf, hit the Space Wolf player. I shot a Stormwolf out of the sky first turn with my las cannon Havocs. So that was pretty good. And they do something like that pretty much every game. So I guess they are kind of worth it. But the devastation battery that I was running them in doesn't seem worth it because as soon as one, if you get first turn, the stratagem's useless. That lets you fire in your opponent's first movement phase if you didn't get first turn. And two, the warlord trait becomes really useless if you kill all the vehicles turn one. So from turn one on, devastation battery just becomes useless. And I don't have to worry about ignoring cover because I do that anyway with my Legion trait. So, yeah, I probably won't be using Devastation Battery anymore. It just doesn't seem very worth it. Soulforge pack always ends up putting in work, so I've been enjoying that. Plus two movement and run and charge is pretty good on things like a Kaitan. That's how I was able to get my first turn charge. Yeah, so that's pretty much my thoughts coming out of games that I've played recently. They were both really fun. I'm looking forward to playing some more, getting some more painted. I got a couple days off coming up, so hopefully I can polish off my army soon. So I'm looking forward to that. Besides that, nothing much else to report. So we could kind of roll on into this week's episode. The UK Games Expo just happened, but not a whole lot was revealed, so we're not going to be talking about that much. It was pretty much Necromunda Gangers. Some new Blackstone Fortress stuff. It looks like new cultists are coming. They're coming for Blackstone Fortress. They look pretty cool, a little more barbaric. If you haven't seen them, check them out on the Warhammer community site. They look cool. Same with these Birdman cultist looking things. I don't know, were they for Necromunda or were they for Blackstone?
For Warcry.
Oh, Warcry,
The
right.
Raven dudes with the stilts and all that, all the knives are for Warcry, so for Age of Sigma.
Okay. Yeah, so that, yeah, they looked really cool.
Yeah, I think Warcry actually is a pretty decent game for picking up some cultists if you want to convert some. Like all the teams so far looked very distinct. And I think you can do something with that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I mean, you take some autocannon arms off like guard kits or Genestealer Cult kits or whatever, and you slap them on some of these new models. Granted, that would, if their arms are attached to the bodies, that won't work. But if by some divine miracle they aren't, they would make some pretty good conversion material because, as we all know, melee cultists are kind of useless. So you kind of want to have them with their auto guns. So we'll see when they come out. I'll be interested to see how the kit is. So yeah, that was pretty much everything that came out of the UK Games Expo. There was Arbites, Adeptus Arbites released, I believe, the Palanite Enforcers
Yeah.
for Necromunda. They look really cool. So that'll be pretty cool. Probably more conversion material out of them. Depending on what their base size is, I may even use them as cultists for Iron Warriors because they would look pretty cool.
They should be regular dudes from same size as 40K, so yeah, would work.
Cool. That's good to know because they would make some pretty cool Iron Warriors cultists.
Yeah.
So the main topic for this week's episode is going to be what we would like to see changed in the game, pretty much. And Caramon, we agreed that we're going to start with you. So, what kind of things are you seeing with the game, and what would you like to see changed going forward?
Well, I'm gonna skip the super end because that's Wayne's territory.
Yeah, Wayne will cover that one.
I'm pretty happy with like my armies. Thousand Sons, Nids, both are in pretty decent spots in my opinion, at least for what where and what I play.
Yeah, they're very solid.
I didn't really get to do much with my elder so far, but so I'm holding back on that. And I didn't get to play around with the new Inari yet, so I won't comment on that either. So army-wise, I'm pretty happy so far.
Okay.
Gameplay-wise, in total, let's see. Only soup, so that's gonna be skippable. So that leaves me with,
I know
effectively just.
you were saying something about the release schedule.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Like, it's very, heavily favored towards what GW thinks is popular. Like, Primaris, Space Marines, now Chaos got a whole bunch. While, for example, Necrons and Eldar just got, Wake the Dead and the Forgebane, like
Yeah.
two models this over the last 2 years, I think. Nids haven't had anything since last edition.
To be fair, nobody likes Eldar, and Eldar should be purged. So, I mean, there's that.
You're talking to an elder player.
If you
Well,
get
not main.
Good rules, you can't have good models. That's how it goes. There has to be a balance.
Well, then you should have kept your crappy little old fucking Devastators.
No, Chaos are not on the level of Eldar.
But yeah, like, people have been begging for plastic aspect warriors for ages at this point.
Yeah.
My favorite Tyranid infiltrator unit, the Lictor, is still in Resin 2, so it's just the Xenos aren't getting any love.
Yeah.
Let's keep it that way.
I
And I'm kind of sad because they're really cool stuff, and it's just ignored
Yeah.
for the most part.
Yeah, I do feel like their time is coming soon. I mean, at some point they're gonna have to run out of things to release for Primaris and Chaos.
You want to bet on that?
Chaos is in a really good place right now as far as their line is concerned. I can't think of anything that is still fine cast except the Warp Smith and the basic Sorcerer model. I think that's it. I can't think of anything else.
The mutilators, what
Some
about those?
we don't talk about those.
Fair.
So I'm fairly sure mutilators are getting phased out of the game completely. Now that they gave melee weapons to obliterators, they're kind of redundant. So if they were gonna, I mean, I could be wrong though. The obliterator full kit could come out from the Shadowspear guys. Their full kit could come out, and they could be a dual kit with mutilators. I don't know. I don't know why they would do that after making a brand new codex, but I mean, that does seem like something they would do. But besides that, I mean, a lot of our named characters are still resin, like Lucius the Eternal and Huron Blackheart. They're all still resin, so I mean, they need updates, but that could come in time. Lucius will probably come out when Emperor's Children get an update. So, I mean, that's whatever. But yeah, Eldar are definitely need us some love. I mean, the Tyranid line, for the most part, looks awesome.
It is awesome. It's just like one or two models that are kind of annoying, like the Lictor, Death Leaper, the Red Terror. God damn, that one needs an update
Oh
ASAP.
yeah.
It's h horrible, but like that's basically it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't complain about like a Shrike update kit, so.
Yeah. And I know Necrons actually look fine. I mean, the Warriors could use a little bit of an update, but they're plastic. I mean, the Necron line does look good. Dark Eldar have been completely revamped in 5th edition. Their line looks phenomenal. I mean, they do still have some resin in there that needs to be updated, but, I mean...
Yeah, like Incubi and Mandrakes, but both of those look fantastic anyway, and
yeah,
they're probably fine as a resin kit. I'm not sure.
Well, built them. Nobody likes resin, but the thing about it is... And that kind of leads me into my point about Eldar. The Chaos kits, their whole line got revamped, and they desperately needed it because a lot of their kits were ugly as hell. Meanwhile, I feel the Eldar range, while, yeah, a lot of it is still resin, it aged extremely well. I think a lot of the kits do look good. They don't look as good as Dark Eldar, obviously, because Dark Eldar is a little newer. But, I mean, I do think Chaos needed the revamp before Eldar did. But now that Chaos is done... I mean, the only one left that needs a revamp of that level is Eldar. All the other major armies are either updated or new. So, it's I do think Eldar's time is coming. So, hopefully it comes soon. And that's pretty much my thoughts on that. I do think it'll happen sooner than later. Maybe next year. May even be around Christmas. I don't know. It won't be happening this summer, but it's definitely going to come soon. So that'll be that. Now, Wayne, we're moving to you. I don't know if you if I should go grab lunch while you do this or
no.
Okay.
I mean, realistically though, and you know, I've been involved in this hobby for a long time. My biggest issue with as far as what they could fix, they need to determine what scale they want the game to be. Like, the problem before is 40K was a more company-level game back in 2nd edition. And you only had a couple of guys. I think you had, like, if you had 50 models, you had a lot. And then when 3rd edition came out, they reduced the points and they increased the size. And it's slowly been growing over the years. So now, especially since they have Kill Team, and they're adding expansions to Kill Team, so what, you can have elites, you can have HQs, that's it now, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That should be it.
For now, right? But yeah, I mean, so with that, and they've announced Apocalypse, so... You now have small-scale 40K and large-scale 40K, so I feel that they should really solidify the main game as being the right size. Like, I personally don't feel that super heavies belong in the game. Maybe if you're doing 3,000 points or whatever, sure. But at the normal size, like at 2,000 points or, God forbid, below, super heavies don't belong in the game. The game is not made for that scale.
Yeah, I know you've said this sentiment often. How could you say something so controversial yet so brave? I actually agree with you. I think the problem with allowing super heavies into the base game is that it kind of skews... On one hand, it skews the power level a little bit. Like, there's such a jump in... I don't really know the word for it, but there's such a jump in power between your average cultist and then a knight that it almost feels like it should be something gigantic. But then in order to get it to fit into these smaller games, you have to actually make the knight less powerful than it should be. Like, you can have a knight go through all of its attacks and only kill, like, 5 guardsmen, you know, depending on dice rolls. So it's like... it's awkward. It makes the scaling awkward, because what can you do on a D6 system that will adequately represent how much stronger an Imperial Knight is than your average Space Marine? You know what I mean? You can only do so much. Like, a Lehman Russ is toughness 8. Okay, I get that. But you also have to make the Imperial Knight toughness 8 to fit it into the game. I can guarantee you an Imperial Knight can step and crush a Leman Russ. So it does make the game kind of awkward. I do think super heavies on that level probably would have been better in Apocalypse, where they can be amongst their peers and they can be something like strength 10, toughness 10, and feel right. And then everything below in the normal game could then be balanced around the Space Marine like it used to be, instead of having to kind of balance everything around keeping knights in mind. So I do get that point.
I mean, I think that's the biggest issue, is that they want to do everything and be everything to everybody, and you really can't. I personally doubt they'll actually do that, because that, you know, Pandora's box has been opened with that. But it would be my hope, with Apocalypse coming out, they find some way to phase out super heavies. I mean, maybe it's just a matter of the community deciding to play smaller points or restricting super heavies. And I mean, that's the sort of thing that ITC would have a negative effect on, because they largely dictate the standard for matched play, despite them only being a tournament rule set.
Yeah, I mean, ITC is nothing more than house rules, and all the time I see people playing match play games using ITC rules, thinking that they are the actual GW rules. Like, I see people moving models, they're playing just regular match play Eternal War, and they're moving models through terrain, at like their ruins. So, I know in ITC, infantry can move through terrain, no problem. Is that just an ITC rule, or is that a GW rule? I always thought that was just an ITC rule.
ITC rule is that the first level of runes blocks line of sight.
Oh, that's the one I'm thinking of, yeah. Not the runes rule, it's the line of sight rule. I always see people saying first level of runes blocks line of sight. And you know what, I agree with that rule, I do, but it's still just a house rule, and a lot of people are attributing that to GW. So...
To be fair, though, I see a lot of people do that even with GW's own suggestions. Like, the number of people that will say, oh, well, remember the 3 detachment limit. That is an organized play rule, and it's a suggestion. It is not a matched play rule. If you're not playing in an event, the 3 detachment limit does not apply.
Yeah.
And everyone and their mother assumes it. I believe the rule of three or whatever, the data sheet one, I think that's an actual match play rule. I can't remember. That might be an organized rule, though, too.
It's both organized events rules, so it's not
really
match play. Yeah.
The rule of three is a match play rule now.
Is it?
To my knowledge, yeah. I can't remember. It was in the big fact. Look it up. I'm pretty sure it's a match play rule now.
That one could be. I know the detachment one is not. And every time, like, someone will post something, and, you know, someone will be like, oh, well, you can only have 3 detachments. Are you playing in an event? No. You're playing a regular game? Then no, you can have as many detachments as you want.
Yeah, that's why a lot of people aren't using the Noctilith Crown, because it takes up an entire detachment.
That, I think, is a problem. On that note, actually, while we're waiting for the confirmation, the other thing, I really think they need to redo some of the detachments. Like, I don't think they need to have as many as they do. I would rather them have, like, you know, your battalion and your brigade add, like, one flyer, one up to basically like the old combined arms detachment, where you got like these many troops, you could have one fortification, one flyer, one super heavy as part of that detachment.
I agree with that, because I don't know how often I'm building lists, and I'm building these lists, and it's funny you talk about the 3 detachment limit, but I'm building these lists for regular games, and I'm still, in my mind, I'm trying to make them 3 detachments, because that rule is just so ingrained in my mind. How often I would like to be able to put a fortification and a super heavy in my battalion, so that way I don't have to waste a whole detachment on them.
Well, no, I checked. I did a search. The rule of three is organized events.
Yeah, I just
yep
couldn't find it right
number,
now.
number of times each data sheet can be included. And it's 2 up to 1,000, 3 up to 2,000, and 4 up to 3,000. But that's a good example. Everyone and their mother is like, oh, well, you can only have 3. If you're not playing an event, doesn't count. But everybody seems to think that it's a rule, and it's not.
Yeah, that's true. I thought they were rules. So, I mean, I get it.
Organized and match play are kind of vaguely defined, so it's easy to see why people make that mistake. But yeah,
that's a good point you just brought up, and that's another thing I think they should do. They should really differentiate between matched play and organized play, and they've tried to, and it's not enough of a line, because like a lot of the changes that we've seen them do to matched play is as a result of tournaments. They don't affect normal games. So there's this attitude that if you're playing and you decide you want to use points to balance as opposed to power level, that you should follow all the rules for a tournament. And it's like, no, when you're playing competitively, you need to have an extra layer of rules. Like, I think half the rules they have, and I don't have a list, I can probably make one, that are on match play should not apply to match play. It should only apply to events. So your tournaments say, basically a tournament pack, similar to, Joe, I know you played Wormahordes for a bit, right?
Yeah, the
basically,
steamroller.
They need a steamroller, yes. Basically, they need a steamroller to where they have, here's match play that has some rules to balance things out. And then on top of that, you have a tournament pack that is, here's additional restrictions for tournament play when you want to make sure that things are as close as possible to allow the maximum, you know, competitiveness. Because for a regular game, I mean, you often don't care beyond the general, okay, let's play this many points. Because really, that's what you want. You're not getting to the nitty-gritty of, oh, well, we need to balance this and this and no, none of these and three of these and blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, having to wait. It's things like having to wait until turn two to deep strike that I think should be tournament only. Regular right. match play, I mean, all your rules should apply. Because a lot of these units are made around being able to deep strike, and hampering them ends up just being a waste of points. They end up not being worth it. So I do agree on that line. I do think GW needs to do a better job at differentiating between what's just match play and what's organized tournament play. Because too many people take the tournament standard as the standard for everything, and it does get pretty annoying.
I mean, I get it to a point, because if you have a competitive area and you're mostly doing tournaments or tournament practice, then I could see you doing that, but that's a local thing. Like, that shouldn't be the default. And the argument I hear is, well, the tournament rules make matched play more balanced in general, and it's like, that's true, but if I'm not playing a competitive match, I'm literally just saying, hey, do you want to play a 1500 point game this weekend? Who cares? We don't need to have it as tightly balanced as if it was, hey, I'm prepping for a tournament in 2 weeks, bring a 2000 point list, and oh, by the way, I'm prepping for a tournament, so, you know, expect me to bring the filth.
Yeah.
There's a small thing I would like to play devil's advocate for, and that is that, sadly, a lot of really disgusting tournament shit does trickle down to match play.
Yeah.
So, for example, Smite Spam. Locally, we had like 4 dudes abusing that before the changes with the adding an the plus one per attempt, and it was kind of disgusting.
I mean, that's kind of the crux of my issue too. So much trickles down from the tournament scene, and tournament players are a vast minority of the player base in this hobby, and I feel like what's the word I'm looking for?
Influence?
They influence them. They influence the game too much compared to how many of them there actually are. You know what I mean?
That's because they're the loudest.
Yeah. So you've got your average Blood Angel player who, luckily, this rule got changed recently, but you had your average Blood Angel player who only played Blood Angels, he played casually. Then, you know, Johnny Guard player who liked bringing Blood Angels and Knights to his games decided...
Smash Captains, right?
Yeah, decided that he needed Smash Captains, and then he got the whole faction nerfed because, you know, the Guard player decided to abuse some things now in a tournament, and now, you know, Timmy Blood Angel's army's nerfed because of it, and he has nothing to do with tournaments. So too often, these competitive organized play games are happening, and people are bringing filth to these games, and all they're doing is affecting the casual player who has nothing to do with them. The tournament player is just going to take those nerfs, change what units he's using, and move on to something else. Meanwhile, the pure Blood Angels player is sitting there having to live with this nerf now. So, I do think tournaments affect regular play way too much. That's why I would like to see them differentiate like a true rule set, like a very different rule set between tournaments and casual match play, to hopefully alleviate some of that issue. And I do think a lot of these issues come about as a result of soup. So we could kind of roll into that next, if you have something to say on that.
I mean, I think honestly, it boils down to if GW can't or won't do it, ITC needs to. Because ITC has such a large influence in tournaments, at least in the US. In Europe, I think it's lessened, but in the US, they have such a huge influence that they need to do it again. Like they did it in 7th, 6th, and 7th, where they had their own basic FAQs and their own house rules to fix the game. They need to go back to that, I think. And if GW won't limit it, they need to limit it because they should know. Like, Soup's a good example. It'll go into that. GW has shown they have no desire to touch it. They've had plenty of chances, and they will not nerf, you know, being able to cherry pick units or being able to have CP farms or CP batteries or whatever. And if they're not going to do that, ITC needs to do that.
Now, to play devil's advocate really quick, GW has been, in their most recent armies, they have been releasing rules that have actually limited soup a little bit. I do think they want to draw it back in, because I think they're starting to find that from a gameplay perspective, it's impossible to balance. I mean, it might seem fun for, you know, a Jimmy casual player to play whatever he buys, and it's like, oh, I can play my Guard and my Space Marines, but that's, you know, that's not what's happening. People aren't playing, like, Guard and then Tactical Marines backed up by Devastators, like, right. You know, like, casual stuff. They're playing, like, oh, here's my Knight Castellan. Here's three Blood Angel Smash Captains that aren't leading anybody, but for some reason they have the time to be here. And
Mephiston.
And then, I mean, on the Chaos side, it's like, oh, here's Ahriman and two Demon Princes leading a battalion of Red Corsairs, and here's Abaddon and a million cultists. Like, it's not being used in the way that I feel GW intended, and to that end, it's negatively impacting the game. Without limits on what you can and can't take, and maybe even a points limit being instituted.
May I hook in there?
Yeah.
What I would love to see as, well, maybe not limiting, but at least making it bearable, in a sense, bring back the goddamned ally charts.
Yeah.
You mean and the whole Battle Brothers Come the Apocalypse, that?
Yeah, and make them really flavorful. Like, for example, let's go Space Wolves and Dark Angels. Like, if they get too close together, make the Warlords fight each other.
I think that does happen. They have a stratagem for that. Dark Angels do,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah, but you only use it to get a buff because it buffs you.
Yeah, I mean, right now you could run Khorne and Slaanesh Demons with no drawbacks next to each other. Now, if you could run them on the same board, but they had to stay, like, 2 feet away from each other at all times, or else they started fighting each other, that would be okay. But,
like, yeah, bring back those old ally charts and make them flavorful. Give them a narrative a set, and give them, like, a really strict match play set, and there we go.
What might actually work, honestly, is
the approach they did with Sigmar, where you have a limited selection of allies and a limited amount of points, and then you're restricted, I believe, in what you can take. That way you can use it when it makes sense. But if you notice in Sigmar, they push the opposite. 40K, they push, hey, you can take all this stuff together. Sigmar, they push, here's your army. You know, 95%, if not more of it, is going to be from that army. But hey, you can take a couple extra things because some people want to do some flavorful thing. They want to have some weird reason why you have these two things together.
Which is really funny because Age of Sigmar was originally just about, hey, take whatever you want. They didn't even have points. And now they're right. they're the more strict of the rule sets. I mean, there's a lot of things Age of Sigmar does right that I really agree with that I wish 40K would adopt.
Unless you're playing Order, then you get four fucking Stormcast Ballistas and the Lord Ordinator. Put them into your ally slots and nuke someone off the board. Yay!
I mean,
pretty Sigmar.
You could do that, but
yes, you can.
But you won't because that would make you a bad person, right?
Who yeah, we're well cares? We're well past the days of Spirit of the Game. I could go and find. I actually have a White Dwarf from 97 or something like that, where
God,
they have
old.
An article. Yes. Where they have an article from Warhammer Fantasy, and they basically state that the army lists are flexible to allow you to have themes, but some people will take advantage of that and take all elites.
Yeah.
And it's basically you're not playing in the spirit of the game, and you should feel bad for doing it.
Yeah, I mean, GW does need to kind of go back to saying it how it is. They kind of did it a little bit in the most recent FAQ when they actually had a FAQ, the wobbly model syndrome, and they were like, really, guys? Like, we had no idea people were playing it like this. They were pretty much like, we had no idea you guys were being this dumb with this. We're FAQing this now because we can't trust you.
Yeah, well, that's like the one that was like, if I'm playing a mission that has the acceptable casualties and I concede, does my opponent win? And it's like, why would you have to ask that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of just shows the level that these... Like, I have nothing against competitive players in general, but some of them, it's like, if you're going to try that hard to loophole stuff so you can win a game, rethink your damn life. It's a game.
Yeah. Yep. Way too many things need to be fact that I feel were pretty clear that didn't need a fact. Like, for the longest time, I play Chaos, so this would have actually benefited me if it went the other way. But for the longest time, people were saying that things that are done, you can use stratagems and stuff that affect you in the shooting phase during things that let you shoot as if it were the shooting phase. Just because you're shooting as if it were the shooting phase doesn't magically make it the shooting phase. It is still the movement phase, the fight phase, whatever. It is still that phase. So people were telling me that I would be able to use Devastation Battery, and during my opponent's first turn, I could shoot, and then I could Endless Cacophony and shoot again. That is not the case. The fact has cleared that up, but the fact that people were doing that blew my mind, and people were actually arguing for me to do it, and I was like, well, I mean, this is a huge buff for me, so, I mean, if you want me to do this, I will, but I know this isn't how this is supposed to be played. People just read into these things so much, and English language being what it is, I mean, there's like 10 different meanings of the word the, so people could see that, and like, it's pretty much whatever interpretation helps you the most, that's the one that all of a sudden you're going to go with. It's really frustrating. It's really frustrating to see a lot of the arguments that come up in this game. It's really frustrating to see what a lot of people try to get away with.
That's the worst part.
Yeah. It is my least favorite part of competitive play, and a lot of competitive players are guilty of it. And I can understand why they're doing it, because it is a tournament. You do what you got to do to win. But at the same time, it's like, is this how you want to win? Like, is it worth it? Is throwing away your humanity worth it?
No, but to be fair, to a certain degree, and without actually implementing this shit, some rule lawyering can be quite fun. For example, I had for Age of Sigma, Lord Croak is a name for you too.
Yes,
the Landlord.
Yeah.
His rule is worded in a way that his own immortality rule would affect its own immortality rule, so he could literally never die in a game. Which is dumb. It's not intended to, but it's a really fun loophole, and I was having a blast when I figured it out. I didn't play it, of course not. I don't even own him, but it's kind of amusing sometimes.
Oh my god. Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be fun. There are some times where people will come up with interpretations of rules, and my brain works in such a way that I can, most of the time, I've never been wrong about a rule, by the way. Like, every time a fact has come out, it's always been in the favor of the way I've been playing it. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but for some reason, I guess I must be in tune with GW's intent, that my brain just happens to work that way too. So, like, sometimes people will come at me with these interpretations, and it'll blow my mind, because, like, never in a million years would my mind have ever thought to think of the rule as being interpreted that way, and I can't even believe people are doing it. Like, Wayne, you did one to me a couple weeks ago with the renegade traits, thinking that your whole army had to be renegades. I mean, that's never been clarified, I guess, through the fact, but, like, it blew my mind, because, like, I never would have even thought of that interpretation.
I mean, I think the big problem is that, let's face it, GW writes rules in a weird way. They don't write rules that are clear and concise and don't have some level of ambiguity. Now, I agree some people take things way too far, what I've seen, but some of it's literally like, what does this mean? You don't know.
Yeah, like the grinding advance rule.
Yeah.
That ended up getting fact. I remember seeing a post on the Facebook page about grinding advance, and they were like, the GW person who responded was like, well, we're pretty sure zero is less than half, so we're going to go with that you can, you know, grinding advance still works if you don't move.
Yeah, they said something like, we're not sure what the confusion is, but we'll pass it along.
Yeah.
Amusingly, that rule is still not clear because the wording isn't really.
No, it is. It was fact. I mean.
No, not the distance. The ignoring the minus one to heavy. It's worded in such a way that it could either mean if you will move below half or always. So.
Well, that's like if you technically read the rule by the rules as written, you cannot advance and fire assault weapons.
Yeah.
Because the way it works is it says it's something like if you advance, the unit can't be chosen to shoot, and then the assault weapon is when you choose a unit to shoot. So if you could choose them to shoot, they would be able to fire, but you can't actually choose them, and it's one of those, nobody would run it like that.
No.
But technically, that's what it means.
I'm going to start enforcing all those rules, and when I go to LVO, anybody who advances, I'm going to be like, nope, can't do that, and then I'll point to the rule book and be like, nope, never been fact, can't do it. And then the
thing is, you would technically be right. Like, a judge would technically have to agree with you.
Exactly.
Because that is what the rule says.
And I'm going to do that just to point out the glaring error, just to bring GW's attention to it after I win LVO by shutting down everybody's shooting through rules lawyering.
So you will be that guy.
Yeah, every game was won without firing a single shot.
Because everyone rage quitted.
Yeah, because everybody rage quit, and I just rose up the ranks in a dark horse underdog. They call me the passive general. I win without violence. All right. So, yeah. I mean, we know soup is an issue. I mean, soup, the spirit of soup, I don't think is the issue. The issue, right. I see it, is it's just for GW, they already are not the best rules writers. Trying to balance the entirety of Imperium against, like, Necrons is impossible. It is such a game design nightmare that I don't understand why GW would want to open themselves up to that. So I think for their sake and for the sake of the game, it might be in their best interest to kind of rein in Soup, do something along the lines of Age of Sigmar, where you only have like 200 points in a 2,000-point list to ally in a couple little things, because otherwise it's a gameplay nightmare. I mean, they will never be able to balance the game as it is, because you will always have these broken combos, and then it'll just be a cycle of nerfing things and then new things coming in to take their spot. It'll be a never-ending cycle.
Well, like, that's part of the problem, is it's, you literally can't balance the game when factions have their own internal balance, and they don't even really have that. Let's assume they did here.
Yeah.
Even if your factions had their own internal balance, okay, well, this faction has a lot of guys, but they're weak.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll just take the good parts from that, and then I'll take the strong, you know, the custodies level kind of guys from this other faction, and I've mitigated my weakness. How do you balance?
Yeah. I mean, a good player, and I feel like tournament players should want this, because I feel like a good gauge of competitive play would be being able to play with an army and playing around their weaknesses. I think if you can just plug up all your weaknesses in list building, I mean, what is that really saying about your play? I mean, assuming all skill is equal, then it just comes down to whose list is better. And I feel like it would be an even better gauge of somebody's skill at this game if they were able to play an army with its strength and its weaknesses and be able to, you know, amplify the strengths and mitigate the weaknesses through their play within their own codex. I think that would be a much better gauge. As it is right now, I personally think competitive play is a joke. A lot of the armies end up being the same all the time that are in the top tables. I mean, you always have your outliers, but a lot of them end up being the same. It's clear what the best units in the game are, and everybody's taking them if they want to be competitive. And I don't blame the players for this at all. I blame the game. I mean, they can only play with what the rule set given. I can't fault them for playing the best things in a competitive game. I mean, it's up to GW to plug this up. I do feel like competitive players will actually have more of a sense of accomplishment in their tournaments if they win these games with a single faction and are able to mitigate their weaknesses through their skill and their play rather than their list building. So
I can actually confirm that from personal experience. It's really damn satisfying to win the match up by your own fucking skill.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think a lot of the competitive players claim that, but they really don't.
Maybe, but I'm not going to pretend like I know all those guys personally, you know what I mean? So I'm not going to go out of my way to say anything ill about anybody. I would rather believe in the goodness of humankind. Yeah, I know. But to keep from being too negative, I would rather believe that this is mostly a game issue, not a player issue, and I feel like the players are going to adapt to whatever GW makes. So if GW decides to restrict it, the players are obviously going to follow. I mean, it's not like the tournament players are all of a sudden going to fall off the circuit because GW changed the rules. I mean, they do that all the time. They'll just change what they do and they'll go right back at it. So that's why I'm saying I can't really fault them for working with the tools given. I think they just need different tools.
Yeah, that's fair, I guess.
Yeah. So, those are my thoughts. I know, Wayne, me and you tend to agree on most things. As far as Soup goes, I agree. You obviously know my thoughts. I've been talking about that for a while. Caramon, I agree with you about the release schedules. I would like to see them kind of become a little more even across the board. The only other thing that I think that I would like to see return to the game, and I know this is going to be a very unpopular opinion, but I actually miss templates.
I too. I want them back.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Because blast weapons and flamers just don't feel right anymore.
The amount of hits just feels too little.
Yeah, you roll up with a Vindicator, right? It's supposed to be like a heavy blast weapon, and you shoot into a unit of guardsmen. Let's say you roll average and get like a 3 or a 4. You're only killing 3 or 4 guardsmen with that Vindicator. Like, I mean,
that isn't right. Just
it's definitely weird. If they're not going to bring back templates, they got to change the way these weapons work. Even flamers don't really feel right. Like, you're unleashing a flamer into a unit of orc boys, and you roll a one for the shots. Like, what's happening that you're only hitting one orc, that you're shooting a gout of flame into this blob? I mean,
maybe they should adjust the amount of shots you get to the size of the target unit.
I mean, they do that with Vindicators somewhat. I know you get, I think it's only D3 shots if you're shooting at something regular, and then it's D6 shots if you're shooting at a unit of 10 or more or something, or 5 or more.
Like, scale it up a little bit harder, like make the flamer D3 hits against 5, like D6 against 10, make it 2D6 against 20 dudes,
yeah, well,
something like that.
None
that
of them, I don't think any of them should be D3 or D6. They should be 2D3, 2D6, because either way, if you roll, if it scales from D3 to D6, you still can roll the 1. So,
yeah,
I mean,
I was giving an example.
Yeah.
The exact amount of dice and how big the dice should be is up for balance.
Or what they could do is they could give you a static number of shots, but make them high damage and allow the damage to spill over like flails.
Like the plague feathers.
Yeah.
I actually hate spillover damage, but it would make sense.
It would make sense for those specific weapons. I don't like it. Yeah. That's one of the things I don't like in Age of Sigmar. I don't like some guy with a damage 2 hammer hitting a guy and killing 2 people. Like, that doesn't make much sense to me. But in Warhammer, with things like Vindicators, Blasts, you know, Basilisks, something like Flamers, you get a static number of shots. And say a flamer, it'll still be strength 4, you know, AP 0, but let's say you have 6 shots, just static, and they're 2 damage each. You still got to roll the wound, and the damage spills over. I think it would feel a lot more right. Probably not 6 shots, that's probably too many. Let's go with 4. 4 is a nice average number. 4 shots, AP 0, strength 4, damage 2. Now, any of those wounds that go through, you're killing 2 guys. So I think that would be fair. Same with the Vindicator. I mean, it's supposed to be this giant siege weapon. Make the damage spill over. I think that's a better way. If they don't want to bring templates back, I do think that's a better way to kind of to show things off as being big blasts or being flamers. It's a good way to show that. So that's pretty much the only other thing that I could think of that I would like to see in the game, besides limits for allies and everything like that.
I have another one. Armor values.
Armor values, like,
for the tanks, like, it shouldn't be possible for, like, this cultist dude with his tiny fucking pistol to actually wound a predator tank.
I mean, that's not necessarily true. Only because it could be that lucky shot that goes through the little eye thing or some like vent port or something that hits the guy on the other side. I don't know. It happens. Haven't you ever seen Saving Private Ryan? I mean, sure, it wasn't him that actually killed the tank, but I mean, he was trying. So, I mean, you never know.
It's just kind of annoying that everyone's just taking like 20 dudes and glancing the pure fucking thing to death.
Yeah.
It's just annoying.
That used to be Necron shtick, and that's why they're not good anymore, because their Goss doesn't mean anything anymore. Although I can't even say that. I mean, Dennis thinks that, but every week I'm seeing Necrons placing high in another tournament. So, I mean,
What are they fielding?
Probably 3 Doomsday Arcs, because like this shit is cheap as balls and it hits like a truck.
Honestly though, the lists are all pretty standard. It's usually Immortals, 3 Doomsday Arcs, but I mean, it's really, they're only tanks, so you can't really blame them for that. I mean, they're taking 3 and a spearhead detachment, so it looks normal. They're taking Immortals,
4 Tesla shots probably, so to clean out hordes.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could get a list up in front of me, but it's a pretty normal looking list. I mean, nothing that seems outright filthy. I mean, it all.
To be fair, I think the Doomsday Arc, for its actual damage output, is a little bit too cheap.
Maybe.
It's set off because it's, like, really squishy with T6 and, I think, 4-plus save.
Yeah, and it's only got, like, 12
and
wounds.
And quantum shielding isn't really worth anything against a plasma shot amount, so...
Yeah, when your toughness 6, quantum shielding ain't gonna do much, because I could glance him to death with autocannons.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that brings up another point. Plasma. Plasma needs to be fixed.
Yeah, that's some kind of words I'm not gonna touch.
Yeah.
No, think of it. Well, let me explain this.
Okay.
We've talked about this before, but...
Yeah.
So, plasma's, what is it, strength 7, and then strength 8 if you overcharge, or
yeah.
something like that?
Yeah.
Depends on the plasma weapon, but should be that, yeah.
Right, the normal one. So,
yeah.
Right, so the thing is, before, your plasma always had a chance to overheat. They didn't have the overcharge or whatever.
Yeah.
So, your Eldar and your Tau versions didn't overheat because, you know, they're superior technology to the stupid humans.
Well, the Tau one actually does overheat still, but the Eldar one
now it does. But I'm saying, well, let me finish. So,
sorry.
Before, that's fine. I know where you're going with this. So, before, the Tau plasma rifle was strength 6.
Yeah.
And the idea, the whole fluff reason was that they had it so it fired at a lower power and it never had to worry about overheating. The drawback was that it was weaker because it wasn't firing at enough to whatever overheat the coils or whatever, however the hell it actually explodes.
Yeah.
So what they should have done is when they took away the normal plasma overheating, they seem to have missed that point that they should have dropped the strength. Plasma should be strength 6 if it is normal, and then it can go up when you have the risk.
Yeah.
It's too good right now. I mean, literally, why would you... Think about it. Why would you... If you had the choice to take plasma or basically any other special weapon, why would you not take plasma?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it should be strength 6 base, strength 7 when it overcharges.
Because it would make more sense from the lore.
Yeah, and then it would give more of a reason to run Meltaguns because they would be strength
right.
8, and, you know, they'd be wounding vehicles.
Yeah.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
It would give you a reason to it.
Yeah, because then plasma could be the elite hunters that it was meant to be, and then Melta has its niche as a tank hunter.
Right, I mean, even with strength 6, plasma still is good against elites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it boggles the mind that they went and did that, and it's like, they had a reason. That's the same reason why star cannons are strength 6. Star cannons were better because, you know, Eldar technology is better than... stupid monkey technology, but you know,
Munkai.
Yes, the Munkai, yes,
yeah.
Thank you, Farseer.
You're welcome, Inferior One.
I get it.
Eldar too, buddy.
Ew.
I stopped playing him though. I don't like him, anyways. But yeah, but it was weaker strength because it's supposed to have a less of a. I say charge, but not charge. Whatever the hell it's supposed to be. It's a less power, so but you don't run the risk of it blowing up in your face.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
I get
hell,
that.
I remember when only the Chaos one exploded. Because that was the second edition one. The Chaos had the Mark I plasma, which was the one that exploded. I think it got more shots or was the potential for more shots. It had something that was better, but like if you rolled... was the equivalent of rolling a 1 because you use the sustained dice.
Yeah.
But if you rolled that, it exploded.
That's funny.
Because it was unstable because, you know, heresy stuff was supposed to be less refined before they switched it into like, no, that stuff was more refined.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Now the old stuff is like the good stuff.
Well, see, actually, what's the ADMAC plasma do that's different?
Let me just check that up because I have Battlescribe here on the computer.
I'm pretty sure theirs is strength 6. I'm like fairly sure that it's weaker. The plasma caliber or whatever it's called.
Yeah, like there's a caliber and then there's the culverin, I think
the
is culverin.
The culverin. Yeah, that's the one that's on the Cataphrons.
Let me just
I do know that the Cataphrons. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my thought process there is, if they were going to do that, then your ADMEC ones could maybe be slightly better because, you know, they're technically using heresy-ish era technology. So, you know what I mean? You have sort of a balance. Your regular ones are weaker, your AdMech ones, because they're using heresy level stuff, is slightly better in some ways. Like maybe it gets an extra shot or, you know, whatever, better damage, something like that. Something to show that it's a better technology.
Plasma Culverin, 36 inches, heavy D6, strength 7, minus 3, 1, and overcharged strength 8, minus 3, 2.
Yeah, that's the Cataphron one.
Caliber. Yeah. So, which one is the alternative? Oh, the...
The Plasma Caliber is on the Skitarii.
Yeah,
like the regular one. Where is he? Skitarii. Ranger or Vanguard?
Vanguard. Yeah.
Yeah, because Rangers are the ones with the Transuranic Arquebus.
Ah, there we have it.
Yeah.
Plasma Calverin view. Assault 2, strength 7, minus 3, 1. Assault 2, 8, minus 3, 2.
Okay, so it's Assault.
It's Assault and Heavy, yeah.
That's good then. It shows that it's slightly better because, you know.
Yeah, you can use it while you're running, I guess.
Right. Got, you know, weird.
I mean, the best coaster way to handle it, I think, is actually on the Hellblasters, because they have, like, different weapons with different settings. Like, you drop one strength for Assault, you drop get one higher for Heavy from the Rapid Fire one.
That's actually a really good idea.
Yeah, but drop the entire increment by one down for the Heavy to go up to at most 8. And then the Rapid Fire to 7, and then the Assault 1 to 6, and it would be probably fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, though. Plasma does. I think just knocking it down one notch will give Melta back its purpose, and will put Plasma in kind of a good place, because it'll still be able to hunt light vehicles and elites. But
I mean,
that
the Heavy one would still be able to hunt Heavy vehicles, and which would be fine.
Not if it was, well, yeah, for Hellblasters.
2-8 would be fine, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're just running regular Plasma, now it's strength 6 to strength 7, I mean...
Would still kill Predators.
Yeah, it would still kill Predators on a 4 instead of a 3, and it would be better against the lighter vehicles, so that would be fine. And then Melta would be more reliably killing these tanks like your Predators and then your Lehman Russes. So I do think that would be a good way to handle that. And then it would cut down on Plasma a little bit. And it would make Dark Angel's Plasma a little better too, because then theirs would be really special, being able to get 3 damage on it. So,
which is their point. They're supposed to have like more Dark Age level stuff. That was supposed to be their whole benefit.
Yeah. So I agree with all those points. As far as they're concerned, that's pretty much everything for me. I do think 8th edition is a fun game. I've been having a lot of fun with my Chaos lately. However, there are some glaring things that we've talked about that I would like to see changed in the future, and I think it would do a lot of good for the game. I do think Soup needs to be handled in some regard, and I'm not saying that because I'm hating on tournament players. I'm not saying it because Wayne is. I'm not saying that because I hate Soup or I think it's unfluffy or whatever. I mean, in some cases it's fluffy, in some cases it's not. I mean, that's all subjective. But I think it's a game design nightmare. I don't think it's sustainable for a balanced gaming experience. So
you could kind of try to rein in Soup also via the old attachments, like make it specialized that they have to can I take all allies.
I think the easiest change would just be what whoever your warlord is, those are the stratagems you use.
That too.
I mean,
I'm just
that, and that's it. That's a sentence, and that would cut Soup out completely. Because why are people souping most of the time? Usually it's for stratagems or for CP farming. I mean, if your warlord determined your CP and your stratagems, then Soup would just be an option for people that wanted to do fluffy Soup. Because it wouldn't have the competitive edge to it anymore. I mean, I think that would be the single easiest change they can make, and that's as easy as writing a sentence into a fact. So,
and I mean, you'd still have some cases where Soup would make sense. Like with my Death Guard, for example, I would still bring, you know, a unit of Plague Bearers.
Yeah.
They would still get a benefit, just they wouldn't get all the benefits. I couldn't do all the demon stratagems, but I would still be able to do... They would still get buffs if, you know, I buff demons and stuff like that.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think that would be the easiest. I think that would be the single most beneficial thing they could do to this game. It's easy, easy to implement, and I think it would have such a profound change on the way the game is played, and I think it would make it a lot easier to balance. Because if you think about it, your warlord should be who determines your strategic abilities, you know what I mean? Like, he's the one calling the shots, so why would he be using stratagems from some other army, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It would also be the single most rage-inducing one for the competitive side of things.
So
poor babies.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I disagree. I think, as we've seen from competitive players, I think they would just sell whatever they're not using now and
move on to the next.
Yeah, they'll just move on.
A lot of rage over the soup kill, actually, because there's so many Imperial lists that just rely on their Imperial Guard battery, so I can see the salt amount being high.
The thing is, though, is it wouldn't... The big issue people complain about is killing it completely and saying you can't do this. If you say you can do this, but you don't get as big of a benefit, then it's still an option for you.
Yeah.
Just, it's... It takes away the, you know, no duh, why wouldn't I do this? Like, that's the thing. Anything that's a must take, to me, is a problem in there because it removes, it pretends there's a choice when there's really not.
Yeah.
Because how often would you see somebody take the Loyal 32 and something else if they didn't get access to bonus CP from this and stratagems from this, that, and the other thing? They may still, someone may still do it if it fits and they have an idea, but they, it wouldn't be a, why would I not do this?
Yeah, guard, instead of generating CP, the guardsmen would go from just being a CP battery to, I'm going to take these 30 guardsmen to hold objectives.
Right.
And that's...
Which is what they should be doing.
Yeah. Now, what were you going to say, Caramon?
Well, the thing is, though, as we saw with the Castellant, that single nerf would probably kill it competitively.
That's because it got two nerfs.
Yeah.
Two kind of deserved if overblown nerfs, yes.
Now would that Castellan have needed the nerfs if he was taken as a ally and now your warlord is the guard warlord and now that Castellan doesn't have access to rotating ion shields, it doesn't have access to the relics, it doesn't have access to...
In my opinion...
Ion bulwark...
No, that would have probably been fine because he couldn't get to that 3+ invul anymore.
Exactly.
Anyways.
Exactly.
He wouldn't have even...
And that, it still needed a points increase. Maybe not as much, but it needed a points increase. But that's exactly the point. What made the Castellan busted was taking the Loyal 32. It wasn't the Castellan. And everyone was like, oh, well, nerf the Castellan. It's so good. It's only good because you have like 15 CP from the guard that you're just feeding into it.
Yeah. I mean, without that CP battery, the Castellan was not that hard to deal with, and even better if you couldn't take the stratagems for it. Now, if you want to make that Castellan your warlord, and then now your whole guard army is...
no access to overlapping fields.
Yeah, exactly. So, see, those are the kind of decisions that you'll have to start making now in list building if they just make this one simple change. And I think that would have such a profound impact on the game. I'm
not disputing...
It's actual decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I'm not disputing that. I'm just disputing the amount of salt that would generate.
But there'd be salt regardless.
Yeah.
It's always salty, right,
I mean,
Wayne?
Yes.
Salt is a very necessary part of a healthy diet. So... Sometimes you need to have some salt to make something healthy, all right? And I think this would be necessary salt that would make the game state healthy. It would make for more tactical decisions in list building. It would make the game easier to balance. It would keep you from having to over-nerf units that are only benefiting from soup.
Which is really a big issue.
That's
a huge problem.
Yeah, I don't think the Castellan was as good as people were saying it was. The Castellan was only good because you were able to feed it CP turn after turn after turn that you were getting from guard. If your guard was your warlord and you wanted to take Kurov's Akilla and you wanted to take the warlord trait that, you know, can get you CP, you could do that. That is, and now you can use all your guard stratagems, all your guard stuff. The Castellan's there as fire support. He doesn't have access to relics. He doesn't have access to his stratagems. He's just sitting there on a 5-up invuln. He is no longer a problem at that stat line. Without Soup, the Castellan is not an issue. He did not need that kind of a nerf. The only reason he did is because of Soup, because it makes the game impossible to balance. And if you make that one change, all of a sudden the game becomes a lot better.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that they don't, like, part of the issue is they react nerf stuff. They'll see, oh, this is dominating a tournament. Let's nerf this.
Yeah.
Look at the damn underlying problem. Half of these nerfs wouldn't need to be a thing if they simply had it where if it didn't have two, I came up with something before. It was something like if you didn't have two shared keywords with your Warlord's Detachment and not Imperium, Chaos, etc., etc.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't have that, they didn't generate stratagems and they didn't get relics.
Yeah.
I would go so far as to say they don't get traits, but that might be a little much.
That would be overkill because a lot of those units rely on their...
I would be okay with that, but still, no stratagems, no warlords, maybe even half CP, I don't know, like the Brood Brother rule, that I'm iffy on, but still.
I don't even think we need to go that far. I mean, I think that, well... Generating the CP is kind of a... I would have to think of a different way to handle that, because if it was up to me...
Restricted restrict the general CP you get for being Battleforged to the Warlord, and every detachment has only access to its own CP. Done.
See, I wouldn't even say that, because I don't feel...
That, I think, is too much to keep track of.
Yeah, because... Because what's the point? Whoever your warlord is the one who generates the stratagems. So, I mean...
Yeah, I would think... Plus, I think there's more tactical decisions if picking who your warlord is the big thing. So, like, in the case with the knight, if you want to get the rotate ion... Or no, it's... Is it rotate ion or the other one?
Rotate ion's the stratagem. Ion bulwark is the warlord trait. Or the relic. I think it's the warlord trait.
Okay, but so if you wanted that, the knight would have to be your warlord. That's a decision to make. If they can still get access to it, but only be able to use it like twice instead of five times, it reduces it, but I think it makes it too much. And plus, who's going to want to keep track of this detachment has 8 CP and this detachment has 2 CP? No one's going to do that.
Yeah,
they can still be global.
They can still generate.
Just 3 detachments, so it's not that hard.
Yeah, I think they could still generate CP. The detachments could still generate CP, but you only have access to your warlord's stratagems, his faction stratagems. That's it. So your other detachments will be giving you CP, sure, but your warlord's stratagems are the only ones you can use. So you have to decide now if that castellan, making that castellan your warlord and making a very easy target for Slay the Warlord is worth it just for two stratagems and a warlord trait, and then giving up the other 1400 points worth of your army now has no stratagems or anything they can use, or are you gonna support the main bulk of your force and just have the castle and its fire support? Those are the kind of tactical decisions that I think would make the game a lot better and make the meta more robust. So I don't know, I hope it's something that they decide to implement. That's pretty much everything that I want to talk about today. I think we got on to a pretty good point there with the CP, so I would like to end it on that because I feel we got a pretty good discussion out right there. Is there anything else you guys would like to say as a closing remark?
GW should hire us.
Well, they should hire you. I
have not go that far.
Yeah, they don't pay enough for me to want to work for them, apparently.
Me either.
All right. Well, this has been episode 11 of Cast a Dice, a Warhammer podcast. I hope you all enjoyed this conversation. It was a little salty at times, a little sweet, but I think we all could take something from it. There are a lot of changes I would like to see made. I'm not going to stop playing if they aren't made, but I think it would be a good improvement to quality of life. And again, if any of you out there listening have any of your own suggestions or thoughts on the topic, please send them over to ctdwarhammer@gmail.com. I'd love to read them sometime. Again, I'm Joe, along with Caramon and Wayne. We are the Cast of Dice, a Warhammer podcast crew, and I'll look forward to seeing you guys again in a couple weeks. Have a good one and keep gaming.